Hello, and welcome to The Operators, where we talk to the people building the companies of today and tomorrow. We publish every other Monday, and you can find us online at operators.co. Today's episode is very special. We're talking to two UI UX experts who have designed and researched products that have been touched by billions of people. Before we meet them, today's episode is sponsored by Four Sigmatic. Four Sigmatic's Lion's Mane coffee has all of coffee's focusing bark with none of the jittery bite. Lion's Mane provides productivity, focus, and creativity, all while being a healthy alternative to your daily cup of coffee. Go to bit.ly.com/4sigmaticoperators for a special offer. I'm your host, Neil Devani, and we're coming to you today from the Vault of Joy here at Digital Garage in downtown San Francisco. Joining me is Tim Reckin, head of design at Edmodo, the leading classroom and education community with 100 million users globally. Also joining us is Gyulay Burand, a UX lead and product design manager at Facebook. Gyulay works on the newsfeed product used by billions of people every day. Thank you for joining us. If you could tell us more about yourselves and your work, it'd be great to hear more.
Thank you. So my name is Gyulay Burand. I'm a product design manager at Facebook. I've been at Facebook for about 3 months. Prior to that, I was at Google for about 8 years. And I led a horizontal team on Google Cloud Platform for about 4 years of that, leading growth and engagement, support, and product excellence initiatives. Prior to that, I kind of did a bit of a tour to Google, and so I worked on search, identity, a couple of other areas like mobile ads. And then before that, I was at T-Mobile, where I was building mass market and franchise phone experiences, mainly on Android. And prior to that, I was at Amazon leading experiences for the very first Kindle. So that was a lot of fun.
And Tim, tell us more about yourself and how you got here.
Yeah, so I'm currently at Edmodo, leading up design. And that's really across the entire platform that serves our teachers, students, and parents in the US and globally. And before Edmodo, I was at Facebook. And I was on the feed ads team and responsible for the lead ads product that we launched that year. Before that, I was at Mint. So doing personal finance, and some of you may be using Mint.
I'm definitely using Mint. It's great. I love it.
And then before that, SAP, Yahoo, eBay, and then Elance very early on, which is now Upwork.
So. Very cool. All companies I've used, products I enjoy. Yeah. Thank you for helping create them.
Thank you.
So it'd be great if you could tell the folks a little bit more about what you do every day. Who are the folks in your company that you're interacting with? What are your responsibilities? What does it mean to do the job that you do?
So that's a good question. it's a bit mixed. Just so for some context, Edmodo is a company of a little over 100 people. And so our product teams are sort of in the 6-7, you know, product managers range. And I lead a team of 3 designers. So my day-to-day is really getting to work and really trying to figure out what's going on. So this year is a particularly busy year as we get ready for back to school. And so we have a lot of concurrent projects going on. So one of the things I like to do when I get in is just sort of level set, kind of see how my day is, and I'll go check in with the different teams. That sort of is part of the work I do, working with the different product teams and sort of the strategy. So like I said, we're working on lots of different projects. So it's really just keeping everyone aligned and making sure that, you know, designers are delivering things on time, that any, you know, issues or gaps are being filled, and, you know, we can go answer those questions that are coming from product managers and designers. In some cases too, you know, there's a project that's about to be kicked off, right? So everything is not sort of clean, sort of phased, right? There's always these things that kind of pop up. So I'll find myself in meetings and talking about strategy to figure out how to kick off those projects, or also what our go-to-market is for this back to school.
Very cool. Is it similar for you, or is it different?
Yeah, I mean, I think like there's a lot of similarities there. Maybe it's sort of on a larger scale, but basically, I guess like most of my days are spent in back-to-back meetings, and you know, I'm sure you find yourself in that position as well. And a lot of these meetings may seem kind of tactical at first, but they're really not. You know, every one-on-one can lead to sort of like career improvements and discussions around trajectory and things like that, which are definitely more strategic. There's a lot of alignment sessions with our cross-functional partners. There's, you know, reviews. Those I find to be incredibly valuable, so I can see the product firsthand. There's a lot of meetings with our staff, our executives, to basically make sure that we're sort of still tracking towards our strategy and our targets. And then if I'm doing, you know, vision and strategy type work, I try to carve out hours of time so that I can do more deep work. But a lot of it is sort of interacting with everyone from my designers to executives and you know, data science, research, engineering, product management. So that's kind of how the days go.
Yeah. For those who don't know yet, can you share a bit more about the difference between some of the roles on your teams, right? So you have designers, you have folks who are doing research, you have folks who are focused on UI versus UX. How do you think about the different roles and how do you organize them in your organization?
Sure. So I, like I said, our team is comprised of three designers. It's really interesting to see the evolution, right, of the team. We're quite small, so I'm trying to grow the team. But I think in terms of how the designers are actually positioned, they pretty much take on everything. And I think that's really interesting, right, about the, sort of the notion of the small company, right? And, you know, the trade-offs and, you know, the pros. I think one of the pros is you have your hands on everything, right? So you really, really own the design in your product area from the very top down to the bottom, you know, from yearly planning to quarterly planning into projects and then delivering the designs. So I put a lot of emphasis, you know, on the design team to really be able to be flexible and move, you know, and tackle any sort of size project that comes their way. So they're more or less full stack is what, you know, people would call that.
So. I guess as far as the different roles go, you know, I find that Facebook is a little different than my experience at Google and some of the other companies. And there's a good reason for how it's structured, obviously. At Google, I led a team that was multidisciplinary, and so I had, at times, you know, even quantitative researchers and prototypers, as well as different kinds of designers and researchers, whereas at Facebook, the structure is a bit more, you know, if you're design, you're leading design. If you are in research, you're leading research. And so the disciplines are kind of separated out in that sense. But we still work as one big team around the different initiatives. And there's definitely an understanding that, you know, this is you own a part of the business and you should be a very proactive part of it and drive it and work collaboratively across the different disciplines to make sure that we can move things forward.
That's pretty great to have ownership like that. I think probably makes people feel mm-hmm. a little better about the work that they do, right? A little
yeah,
more into
I
it.
I would hope so.
Yeah. So let's do a hypothetical question. If I'm a college student or someone who's not working in design or in research, but I'm interested in this field, what would be the advice you would give someone or the advice you'd have given yourself however many years ago to prepare yourself to get into this field?
My path was really windy. I don't know about yours. Like I didn't wake up one day and go, I think I'm going to go into UX. Like this is going to be my thing. I definitely bounced around many different areas. I mean, I shared a little bit with you, I think, but you know, I've dabbled in like simultaneous translation and hospitality management and a couple of other areas and then finally found my way into this. And I think if you have a passion for it, a couple of things I would do is, one, try to get as much education and training around this as possible. You know, there's really great ways to do this. You don't necessarily have to go back to school and get a bachelor's in this and what have you. If that's not what you want to do, there's General Assembly. There's, you know, I don't know, other programs through universities that you can do in a shorter amount of time. I would say freelance. You know, secure freelance work, just start building out that portfolio. And another piece that would be really important, I think, is the mentorship part. You know, like I've had so many young designers and actually others who are wanting to potentially switch to a UX role reach out to me through LinkedIn just to say, hey, your portfolio looked really interesting. And I looked at your job history and I just want to chat with you and understand how you got to where you are. And, you know, can we have a coffee? And that has basically really sort of helped those folks get an idea of how they might progress in their areas, you think?
Yeah, I think the mentorship is really what stands out for me. I think I also took a meandering path, and there was a point in time when I got out of school and I didn't know what I wanted to do. So one of those examples of really not applying your degree in the way that you thought. So it took a little while, but and actually started in multimedia and then saw what was happening down here in Silicon Valley and sort of, you know, I'll go move down there. But I think, you know, looking back, it is about the mentorship and feedback. I think that what's great about where we are today is there's so many different ways that you can connect with people and get firsthand knowledge, right, or guidance on how to, you know, get into the field, some of the things that you really should be emphasizing. I think it's too easy to kind of like, you know, fixate on tools. You make something pretty. And I think that's kind of, you know, a reflection of where we are, you know, as a discipline, you know, design. So I think that if you can find those people that are truly, I think they're the ones that are, you know, I think focused on the product building piece, right? And I think those are the types of people that will give you the guidance. And I think so the fundamentals of product building, right? Doing, you know, creating something pretty and posting it on Dribbble is great, but I really do think it's the mentorship and I think the feedback as well, right?
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
That earlier in my career, I did not find myself in places where the culture was like a Facebook, which is something I really valued there, where it was just constant feedback, you know, and you'd be amazed, you know, it's like, oh, I'm a little embarrassed, but you'd be amazed that when you get that feedback, it starts feeling really good and more iterations you get, you know, the faster you grow.
There's so nothing like good crit. I think you make an excellent point. And like actually being able to take that feedback and do something with it is like a really good muscle to build. And not getting attached to your darlings, I think, is a really big part of it. Yeah, for sure.
I've always noticed that folks who have great design ability or known as being great designers have a strong artistic sense, artistic skill, aesthetic sense. Do you feel like that's a necessary component? If someone maybe is excited about design but doesn't feel like they have any artistic ability, should they maybe find something else, or is there a way to make it work?
I mean, I think you have to have a good eye, but there's so many different kinds of design work that can be done. You know, I think logic plays a lot into it. I think being a systems thinker is a big part of it. Are you able to articulate and understand user needs and the cross-section of business requirements and kind of bring a product together? You know, the point that Tim was making, you know, can you think about all of the things that you're doing in a holistic manner? I mean, I think those are really important qualities too. So yes, as a designer, I think you do have to have an eye and an aesthetic sense, but you know, unless you're going to try to be a really strong visual designer, I don't know that that is the thing I would index on.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny. I'll reference a lot of Facebook things today. You know, Facebook, it's, you know, visual design, interaction design, and systems thinking, right? I really do like that sort of trifecta. And I think any of the two, right, makes a complete designer. And I think it does come down to the fundamentals of product building and how you can actually balance all of these needs, right, and have that focus, right? I think the, you know, what you're particularly skilled at, I think that's part of building diverse teams. You know, I ask a lot of designers, what's your superpower? You know, it kind of stumps them for a second. Like, I don't know, like, you know, do I shoot laser beams? Like, no. You know, I understand you're probably good at a lot of things, but what's the one thing that defines you? You know, and so when you think of yourself on your team, how diverse and, you know, is your team so that you guys can cover each other's backs and as a total team, you can support, you know, the needs that, you know, the work that you're doing.
And to build on that, I would say, you know, as a manager, as a hiring manager, that is what we look for, right? It's like we look at our team and we see sort of like, how are we going to build bench strength and where am I lacking prototyping skills? Is visual design lacking here? And, you know, where do I find those other people to kind of build up the team?
To fill the gaps, so to speak.
Exactly.
Do you find that folks who want to focus more on research have a different set of skills or background that's needed? If so, like, are there dominant things that you would say, hey, if you want to do research and be known as a great researcher, you should spend your time getting really good at this thing?
Well, research is interesting. I love researchers, by the way. They're like the oracle. They just, you know, bring goodness back from the mountain. It's really interesting, though, because, you know, many years ago, or not that many years ago, but you know, researchers, you know, coming from research into digital product design, there was kind of like, what's my role, right? Mm-hmm. And success for researchers was really defined by white papers and publishing. And so back then, it kind of really felt like, okay, I'm doing research, but I don't really know how to plug into the team, and how do I get measured, right? And I've seen now, to where we are today, that researchers are really product partners. And that's what I love about it. And so when I think about a researcher, I think about someone who needs to be there in the very beginning when you kick off projects, who actually can, you know, before that, actually look at the data and insights to actually suggest, you know, directions for the product or new strategies. So I think that evolution has been really cool. And that's what I love about researchers today. And I think that, you know, advice to any researcher that wants to get into the field, I think it would be very similar to designers. You know, really find that mentorship in a situation where the culture is such that as a researcher, you'll be brought in and treated as a member of the product team, mm-hmm. versus just a service, mm-hmm. which can, you know, happen a lot.
I would agree with all of that. I'm also a huge fan of research. I think it's, you know, basically what should help us define our product roadmaps in general, and bring in such great formative insights into any product roadmap. I think to answer part of your question about, like, you know, what qualities should a researcher have, all the really great researchers that I know are incredibly curious. And, you know, they're really into human psychology. They love people, and they want to, you know, sort of dig into problems and investigate quite a bit. So, like, as far as, you know, personality traits, I've definitely seen that as one that's really strong. And I think I would agree that they're a key part of product development now, and definitely at the forefront.
Cool.
I mean, just a quick add-on to that. I think, and you probably see this at Facebook too, a lot of researchers actually will like to dabble in design.
Absolutely.
Which I love. You know, I think when they report out and you get that summary, it is, mm-hmm. as much of, you know, what came out of their work, but also sort of the thinking that they're applying to it. And it's really exciting to see that. It's like, wow, you took it from, you know, doing the study to actually summarizing it to, like, even suggesting, you know, things to do in the product, mm-hmm. which is really exciting.
Cool. Thank you for that. So moving forward, you both have had amazing careers thus far. You're both fairly young, given what you've accomplished so far. I would love to hear, in your own words, how you got to where you are. What were the things that you did that helped you be successful thus far?
I mean, I think it comes back to the mentorship piece. Like, I think I've been very fortunate to have really good mentors at the right times throughout my career. A lot of it has been kind of stumbling around and trying to, you know, try things and figure things out as well, because the field is still very young. And certainly when I started out, it was there. I mean, there weren't a lot of programs around the work that we do and training and things like that. So I think a lot of it was sort of taking leaps of faith and taking on responsibilities and figuring out, you know, what can I do more of, and identifying sort of my growth opportunities and trying to grow in those areas and secure the mentorship for it. I think finding out what you're really passionate about and the types of work that you're interested in doing and pursuing that is another key piece to that as well. So, you know, earlier on, I found out, I actually started off thinking I was going to be a programmer. You know, I really wanted to go into coding, and so I took like C++ and Java and a bunch of other things. And then I dabbled in like front-end development, and then I went, no, actually, I'm more interested in the design side. And on the design side, I'm more interested in, you know, not the visual, but the interaction. And I want to think about the system-level design, and I want to think more holistically and connect the dots. And so, you know, really being cognizant about what it is that you're interested in as you're working on different projects is a big piece of it. And I've tried to be really proactive in my career and think about sort of, where is it that I want to go and what are the opportunities in front of me, and not being shy about, you know, expressing interest in them and performing at that level so that, you know, I can kind of demonstrate that, like, hey, I can take this on, you can trust me. And I think, you know, leadership comes in so many different forms. You know, there's influencing without authority, there's leading without necessarily having direct reports, and I think being able to demonstrate those things goes a long way in kind of, you know, helping your trajectory.
Yeah, I would agree. excuse me. I think for myself, maybe it didn't happen so smoothly. I think I'm a great example of, as an individual contributor, sort of like a moth to the flame, I was very drawn to interesting projects, interesting companies, right? And so I think whether it was social or personal finance, or, you know, the ability to sort of do design work, you know, thinking workshops at SAP, right, to get the lines of business to think more like consumer products. I think I made a lot of decisions to go to companies and join teams that had like an interesting problem to solve. And I do think that, you know, that sort of defines me, and I think that as a designer, you think you find the places and the products that define you, and I think you need to embrace that. I think I did go through kind of an identity crisis about, you know, is this okay? Can I do this forever? Or should
we
I be
all
like,
do.
You know, doing something different? You know, so you know, I think it is really, I think, staying true to yourself and finding your passions. I think at every stop, though, you are trying to address a growth area, right, or fill in a gap, and I think that's key to growth. And I did eventually learn, you know, in the latter part, you know, of my career, that, you know, feedback and mentorship is super important. I did place an emphasis on it, so there was kind of a reflection moment, right, in one of those stops that I was at, where I did focus on that. And and then, you know, Facebook again was a very good example of, I think, continuing to build that, right. And so. Yeah, that's I think I'm still trying to figure it out. So again, you know, I think
The
good news for people out there, right? Don't feel like there's too much pressure, right, to be exactly who you should be at any given moment. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a fun journey. So
I agree. I think like being authentic, being true to yourself is a really, really big piece of it. Yeah.
It's always interesting when you meet other folks that you're very impressed by and inspired by, and they say the same thing of like, I'm still just trying to figure it out too, you know, and it's comforting to know everyone. No one really has it all figured out.
Yeah.
I'd love to get feedback from you guys. Speaking of feedback, around what you would tell someone who's just starting their career, around how to be successful. So we've talked about mentorship. We've talked about staying true to what your passion or your skill set is. Are there other things you would advise? And maybe especially in the context of someone who's thinking about, balancing startup or versus a large company, you know, choosing between the two, what are the pros and cons of each, less from a, you know, financial outcome standpoint, which is, you know, more universal.
That's a whole nother.
Yeah, it's a whole separate podcast. But more so from, you know, thinking about what your job would be like as someone who's doing design or research or what have you.
I mean, I think, you know, so there's a couple of different things. I think part of it is know yourself and what you're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. I think folks who are going to be comfortable and are comfortable in ambiguous spaces, who are excited by, you know, higher levels of risk and defining something out of nothing are going to be really interested in startups or, you know, going into product areas, even within a large company, where, you know, something isn't set in concrete and, you know, product management is going, here, go build this thing. So I think that's one big piece of it. And then knowing that when you go to a startup type environment that you're probably going to have to wear, I don't know, 15 hats and have to do a lot of the work yourself, you know, from defining the requirements maybe sometimes all the way to implementation. You know, it depends on what level of skill sets you have. Whereas at a larger company, you know, you might also feel like the comforts are there in terms of like there's less overhead and things are a little bit more defined for you and you have that security of a larger team potentially where you can kind of hand things off and work collaboratively with other folks and bounce ideas off of them. But then you may not also feel like you're able to make as big of an impact depending on the product and project that you're working on. So, you know, I have been in different projects and initiatives where I've felt kind of like a cog a little bit in the system and not really being able to tie the impact that I'm making directly to the end user experience and being able to say, I did that thing, you know, whereas if it's smaller and the team is smaller and the audience is potentially smaller too, you know, you can kind of see that a little bit easier. Those are some of the things that come to my mind. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I would agree. One of the things I tell people is if you have the opportunity, do a startup and do a big company. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter which way you start, but do both.
Yeah.
Right. The other thing too is there's a little bit of analysis paralysis when you start, you know, really trying to, you put so much pressure on yourself to be at the right company, and especially mm-hmm. today, where so many companies are out there doing amazing things, and you know, feel the need to go to that company, right, and join that sort of, that culture. But what I think is in many ways, you just need to start. Right, just get out there and start. I think that when you're starting out, you have plenty of time, right? Plenty of time
totally.
In your career. And if it doesn't work out at your first stop, you know, the thing is you'll learn something. Mm-hmm. And that's what the most important thing is. So just take that away and then go, you know, say, hey, you know, I didn't like that. It didn't fit. I wasn't getting what I needed. Wasn't mm-hmm. inspired. It didn't feel ownership. And then you go find the next place where you think you'll get that, right? And I think that also combines with mentorship and finding people in the industry
totally.
That can help guide you. But I think, just get in there and get busy. Get your hands dirty. And it doesn't matter if you started a big company, a small company, you're still going to learn something, and it'll be amazing. And then, you know, go from there. I do equate it to like a story, right? You're telling a story. And so I think, you know, and Gulai has been at many stops. And I think, you know, it is a story, right?
Yep.
And so I think that's what you shouldn't be afraid of, is you're telling a story. In the beginning, you write the first chapter. You don't really quite know where it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so as long as you feel fulfilled and inspired, then that's going to be the next chapter and so on.
I love that. And it's basically like staying away from a scarcity mental model mm-hmm. and not doing anything, you know, fear-based. It's mm-hmm. sort of like, we were just talking about this before, actually, you know, if we want to go back to any of these other companies, they're not going to go anywhere. Like,
yeah.
they're going to be there. So, you know, it, like you said, if it doesn't work out, there are going to be so many opportunities.
Yeah. And that's what, it's amazing about what we do, right?
Yeah.
This whole industry. I mean, you sort of pinch yourself every day and you're like,
the world's my oyster.
Yeah,
this is
fun stuff. So,
the giant companies aren't going anywhere, and then there'll always be a new company formed tomorrow
absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely, the opportunities
the
will never end.
Yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not?
Have you guys heard of the Designer Fund?
What's that?
The Designer
mm-hmm.
Fund.
I have not.
It's a venture fund set up to invest mm-hmm. in designers
mm-hmm.
starting companies.
That's amazing.
Designers as founders, which leads me to my next question: gradual transition. When do you think a company, new company, needs to hire their first person in design, whether it's for UI, UX, traditional visual design, interaction design? How should they think about that? Assuming the company has maybe one person who's focused on the business aspects, like the operations and sales, one person who's doing development as like a mobile or full stack developer, and they're like, we really need a designer. What should they be looking for? What should they be thinking about?
Do you want to start?
Yeah, wow.
That's a tough one, yeah.
It is,
that's a good one.
And you know, let's assume that that's something that you can do. I would always, I think, push to get a designer in earlier. Mm-hmm. I think also don't be tempted by, you know, the enormous pressures that you would have on you as founders to, you know, make something look pretty, right? Or to satisfy a short-term need. That's going to mean that you'll invest in someone that maybe can deliver that in the short term, but won't really give you what you need in the longer term, which is really to help you think about your product and how you're serving the needs of your users and so on. And then that's pretty critical, you know, like when you're just launching, you got to get that trajectory right. So I think it, you know, get the designer in there earlier, mm-hmm. but also find someone who is well-rounded that can also, you know, deliver what you need. But quite frankly, there's so many different frameworks out there and, yeah. you know, and you can pull something off the shelf and get something pretty, right? So I think mm-hmm. it is the designer who can really has more or less product sensibilities, mm-hmm. right? Marketing sensibilities, research sensibilities mm-hmm. to really help you find the right direction for your product.
I mean, I totally agree with all of that. I guess the, you know, the other things I would add are, like, depending on what it is, the what is the outcome that you're trying to produce. You know, if it's a digital product, then you need a certain type of designer. If it's, you know, a service that you're trying to design or an experience, you know, then there's service design to really think about. And then if it's, you know, chair company or, you know, some furniture that's being built, then, you know, industrial design comes into play. So really thinking about sort of the specialties a little bit too, but also not over-indexing on, I need to find this unicorn designer that can do everything and is going to be perfect and has to be a glamour hire. Like, you know, just find the right person for the job, knowing what your needs are, and someone who can really do the research. As well, if you can't hire a researcher, would be really, really important as well.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So let's take the hypothetical a little bit further. Let's say I have my co-founder, who's a full stack developer. I'm out here looking for customers. We're building either an SMB or enterprise SaaS product. Mm-hmm. We decide we want to hire a designer, and we find someone who's a series of candidates who are able to do research and the visual design as well. Given the fact that neither of us have ever been designers or hired a designer, what's the best way for us to evaluate folks and try to figure out who's going to be successful? What are those metrics or things to look for when you're interviewing or assessing a candidate?
I mean, if it's an enterprise level app, for just going based off of this example, you know, I would make sure to see that this person has, you know, complex UI experience, that they can actually think about things in terms of, you know, like flows and really making sure that they can think through the interactions at many different levels and potentially for different levels of enterprise users. And then, you know, being that this isn't their core area of expertise, I would recommend leveraging their network too. You know, mm-hmm. like, can they do that? Because they're going to basically get a lot more of a well-rounded sort of bit of feedback on those candidates through that.
Yeah, I think enterprise is an interesting sort of area, and I agree. I think, you know, enterprise represents unique challenges, not just in the complexities of the, mm-hmm. the products, where you have quite a bit of the technical, you know, like integrations and so on, but even connecting with your users is different, right? So you're going to a certain layer, if you will, right? And so it's, you got to dig really deep to find the actual user.
Yeah.
And that's not something that will automatically bubble up, right, in enterprise context. So I think someone who really, I think, has some skill or sensibilities around that, where it's not good enough to talk to, you know, sales. Not that you can't get great feedback, right? But I think, you know, there's a disconnect, and that's just how it works. And I also, you know, think that too, you know, you sort of have to roll with the punches, and this is where we get to cultural fit, it's not always going to go your way, and you might find that one day the founders are going to say, we're going to do this. And so you got, there's a little bit of making lemonade out of lemons, right? So I think the cultural fit is, like, really important as well.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I think that's something that we talk a lot about in terms of culture fit, right? Because you may have the best talented people, but if people aren't thinking about things the same way, they don't have the same similar work style, it doesn't really work out usually. So let's, one last step in the hypothetical. We've made the hire, and now we're trying to figure out how to best manage the relationship, manage the person. What are some tips or things in your experience about having people outside of a design experience manage designers or folks in research?
Okay. Well,
I know it's a good question when there's a long
pause. I've been in that situation, right, where I haven't reported into design. I'm sure you've been in that situation too. And it can get tricky because, when it's not your particular discipline, it's really hard to understand the care and, feeding of that particular discipline. So, I guess what I would recommend is making sure that design is, or just UX in general, is an integral part of the process from the very get-go is very important. Just including us in every single necessary meeting when we're defining the product, when we're trying to make decisions and the direction that we're going to go, I think is a really big piece of it. Giving us the tools necessary and the time and space necessary to do the work that we need to do within our discipline is another big piece of it. I think that sometimes, just as we may not understand, Eng, PM, and other disciplines' sort of processes, there's some confusion or lack of knowledge around what our processes are and why something takes a certain amount of time and why we have to iterate and why we have to incorporate research into it and things like that. And so I would say, if you are going to manage a discipline, try to get as well-versed as you possibly can. I mean, I was in a situation where I was managing quantitative researchers, completely out of my discipline, even sub-discipline, so that was really challenging for me, but I tried to understand sort of the frameworks that they're working with and, understand their ladder in terms of, how are they evaluated, what is expected of that role, and looking at some established ways of knowing what it is that they need in their sort of day-to-day helped with the situation. So I guess that's what I would recommend.
That's great. That's good advice.
Yeah, I think designers are a bit of a black box if you're not a designer. And I think there's a bit of, in some way, a confusion or intimidation, right? But I think, being very clear with business and product goals, I think is really helpful. And then also setting the right expectations with your designer. Again, involving them early. But I think that, designers are designers and you can wind them up and they'll go and they'll just keep going.
Ideally.
And so I think that, And I think especially in this enterprise context where you have lots of deadlines, right, and there's different types of pressures, that you want to make sure that those goals and expectations are clearly defined. So really allowing your designer to actually understand the context and the problem. Right, and then do the work that's necessary for you to be successful. So I think that discussion about if this is what we want to do, and this is what we expect the outcome, then you're going to have the next discussion, which is like, how do you think we should get there, right? And that will be very clear. So you're going to know if the designer needs to go and do some research, if the designer needs to do some sort of concept iterations, right? So I think that's really important. And I think if you do that, then you'll taste some success. And of course, when you taste success, right, then everyone's really pumped up and you can keep going.
Yeah. I think that's really key, right? Like that alignment around the goal forward, right? Cool. Well, before we wrap, I would love to ask you guys a fun question. If you can share a favorite, book or show or even like a place online that you think just has a really good ethos around design and UI UX.
I have one right off the top of my head.
Go for it.
Like this, I'm going to preach this book because I would say like if you are in design in product development in any of the large companies or any company right now, actually, read Ruined by Design by Mike Montero. It's absolutely fantastic. It's all about design ethics and how we as design are really responsible for shaping the products and the outcomes and kind of how it impacts society in general. So I'm really enjoying that right now. I would highly recommend it. Yeah.
Let's see. The book I would recommend would probably be Steve Krug's book, Don't Make Me Think. I think when I started out and was at Elance, I think, again, you know, what is design? What is our role? How do we think about the world and the, you know, users? And I think that book is super approachable. You know, it just, it's a little bit of like, you know, it is what it is, right? You see people and this is how we think about this thing, you know, things and so on. And I just find it like a super refreshing book. It's something that you can, you know, buy easily and hand out to cross-functional teams or anyone who's interested about design. And there's a certain about it, like common, you know, sense to what we do, right? That I think as we live, we sort of gloss over, mm-hmm. but it's very nuanced, right? And so it's, I think it's a great, great book.
A lot of thinking went into making things so easy and natural, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Awesome. Well, thank you for those recommendations. Thank you for joining us for another episode of The Operators. And thank you, Tim and Gulai, for sharing your experience with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity.